because we're going to spend the rest of the morning in Philippians chapter, well, most of the morning in Philippians chapter 2. Some of you might recall a movie wherein these three characters figure prominently. The movie was called Ice Age. And what you have there is Diego is the cat, Sid is the sloth, and Manfred is the mammoth there. At the beginning of the movie, a bunch of saber-toothed tigers attack a tribe of nomads, and a mother and her baby attempt to outrun the man-eaters, but they're cornered at a raging waterfall. But the little boy survives and is discovered by these three. And they form an unlikely herd. Now, as they're trying to bring the baby back to its father, they go through this mountainous terrain of ice and snow, carrying the baby. But at one point, the mammoth, the sloth, and the tiger realize that they're on an erupting volcano. And the heat of the lava is melting the glacier bridges that they're walking on. And at one point, it separates Diego, the cat, from the others. And he's isolated on a quickly melting bridge of ice. And he makes a jump to reach everybody else, but he falls short. He dangles from the edge of the field for a little while before he falls. But Manfred, the mammoth, is unwilling to let Diego die, so he jumps into the chasm after him and tosses the saber-toothed tiger up to safety. Now, Diego realized the danger of that rescue, and he's moved by Manfred's compassion. And he asks him, "Why did you do that? You might have died in that attempt to save me." And Manfred replies, "That's what you do when you're part of a herd. You look out for each other." And Sid, who is not the most intellectually gifted of the group, says, "I don't know about you guys, but we are one strange herd." A strange herd. A lot of times that is a good description of the church. A mix of people with different personalities, different backgrounds, different ideas. And quite frankly, barring the love of Jesus Christ, many of us would probably never meet. Just because we don't have anything else in common. But in one way or another, we've been transformed by Jesus' love and Jesus' mercy. And because of that, we hang out together, and even more than that, as the film illustrates, as a herd of Christ followers, we look out for each other. Even if we look a little strange at times. When the church is working right, it becomes a place where our old nature begins to die, and we start to think differently about the people around us. And people we might never have associated with before, or people we would never have thought to befriend, suddenly become brothers and sisters. And we find ourselves wanting to bring in more people and find a place for them. And our herd or our community becomes a place of love and service, a place where people experience the transforming power of Jesus at work in their lives. If there's a theme that permeates Paul's letter to the Philippians, it is a theme of sacrificial love and service. It's the way that Paul introduces himself and Timothy in the first sentence in chapter 1, verse 1 of Philippians. He says, "Paul and Timothy, servants of Christ Jesus." And it's at the heart of chapter 2. The famous passage which describes how Jesus, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, has descended to become one of us. And even more than that, he descended to serve us. And all the servant and sacrifice talk sets the stage for the section of the letter that Brother Werner just read for us, where Paul is talking about his friends, Timothy and Epaphroditus. Now, they're wonderful little verses that are tucked away inside this letter that remind us that Paul is not really writing a theological dissertation. He's writing a letter from a friend to a group of friends From a very real person with real problems, feelings, and character, to a real group of people with their own unique character and issues. Now we know that when Paul wrote this letter, he was in prison. But we're not sure exactly where. The best guess is that he's in Caesarea. Other scholars suggest that perhaps he was in Ephesus. And although we can't pinpoint where he is, we know that he's far from home. He's far from his friends. He's not able to carry out the calling that he's so passionate about, which is to share the message of Jesus. And in this prison, he feels an incredible sense of distance from his friends at Philippi. And these are people about whom he cares deeply and who clearly care deeply about him. But he's not alone. And things are not all bad. And what makes this section so meaningful is the impression that his two good friends, Timothy and Epaphroditus, have been there with him. And what we see is that they have served him as connecting points between him and the church in Philippi, and they've blessed him, his friends, right there in prison, and they've been a connection to his friends further away. We see this in the way that Paul speaks about Timothy in verse 19, where Paul talks about how he hopes to send Timothy to them as soon as possible. And you notice in the description of Timothy that the servant theme comes right to the front. Let's go back to verse 20 to 23 and read those again. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Christ Jesus. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. Now, one of the important pieces of background information that's useful to know about the letter of Philippians is that one of the issues that the Philippian church is struggling with is bad teaching by self-focused teachers. And there were people at work in their community who were trying to seize power for themselves, and in order to do that, they were willing to talk down Paul in order to get what they wanted. So Paul's response to the leadership crisis at Philippi is to send two of his friends to them to address the situation. And in those two friends, we see some ingredients of the true community. And that first one is Timothy. And what we notice about Timothy is that he doesn't get sent to Philippi because he has great credentials in teaching and leadership. It's not that he has more skills. The qualification that makes Timothy the perfect person to visit them is his character. He has a servant's heart. He is completely unselfish. And his main goal is not to focus his own interests, but to have the people focus on Jesus. Timothy lives his life in complete contrast to those teachers at Philippi. And in just a few words, Paul adds Timothy to the list of examples that he's been using to teach the Philippians what servanthood looks like. And he begins in chapter 2 at the beginning with Jesus, and he says, Jesus, who in being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Then in chapter 2, verse 17, he gives his own testimony, talking about how he is being poured out like a drink offering, which is an incredibly vivid picture of suffering for Jesus. And then Paul points out Timothy, who truly takes an interest in their welfare and is focused on Jesus in everything. It's the faith and character of Timothy that makes him qualified to deal with the unbalanced leadership at Philippi. They seem to be out for their own gain, their own advantage, but Timothy is all about Jesus, and only Jesus. So the first example of community is Paul's friend Timothy. Now, his second example of community is his friend Epaphroditus. Now, we know a lot about Timothy because there are a couple of books written to him or about him to him, and then we know more about him from Acts. But this is the only place in Scripture where we read about Epaphroditus, and so we know virtually nothing about his background. We know that Timothy and Epaphroditus provide the perfect sets of gifts for a hurting church. In Timothy, we see somebody who embodies Jesus' truth in a beautiful way. And because of his character, he's the perfect person to model what it means to have the mind of Christ, to counteract the craziness that is going on at the church in Philippi. Timothy doesn't just know the truth of Jesus, he lives it. So if Timothy embodies truth, then perhaps we could say that Epaphroditus embodies love. Specifically, he represents Paul's love for the Philippians. Going back to the idea of community, that we are perhaps a strange herd brought together into unity in Jesus, Timothy and Epaphroditus give us a beautiful example of what it looks like to help foster community. They embody the two ingredients that the church needs to be at its best: truth and love. So let's take a look at Epaphroditus and see how he demonstrates Christian love. Epaphroditus seems to have been sent to Paul by the Philippian church, and they were so concerned about Paul's condition in prison that they sent someone to care for him on their behalf. Now, if, as we believe, Paul was in Caesarea, then the journey from Philippi probably took more than a month, and a lot of it by boat. Because there's Philippi, and there's Caesarea. It was a long trip and a dangerous journey. That was a lot of commitment in time. That was a lot of commitment in money. And we know that it was a challenging journey because Paul tells us that Epaphroditus became so ill on the way that he almost died. So the Philippians sent Epaphroditus to Paul to encourage him, and now, after he's been there for a while, Paul is sending Epaphroditus back to the Philippians, likely carrying the Philippian letter with him. Now, what's so interesting about Epaphroditus is the way Paul introduces him in verse 25. He calls him my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier. Now, the biblical scholars point out that each of those words in the original Greek holds a slightly deeper meaning than the one before it. The descriptions build on each other, so it seems that what Paul is doing is using these words very intentionally to show them the depth of commitment. And each of those words serves as a good picture of how a community of Christ followers grow deeper. So the first word that Paul uses there is brother. And it's a word that Paul uses a lot. It's a very inclusive word. And today we would use the term brothers and sisters. And what Paul is doing is letting the Philippian Christians know that he's got a connection with them that goes just beyond the fact that they happen to share the same faith in Jesus. They have this heart connection with each other, and they know each other. They've worshiped together. They've experienced God together. And if you were to put it in today's context, largely, your brothers and sisters are those fellow Christians that you see regularly. They're the people with whom you worship. It may be people in your small group. These are people that make up the community of which you are a part. When you think about the people in your church that you spend time with every week in the presence of God, or the Christians in other places of the world that you keep in touch with, those are your brothers and sisters. But the second word that Paul uses is fellow worker. And now the connection goes to a slightly deeper level. Because now it's not just a personal connection on a faith level. Now it's about actually serving together. Paul and Epaphroditus didn't just hang out as friends, they worked together. And they served as partners in the mission field. And Epaphroditus wasn't content to just watch from the stands, he wanted to help. And when Paul thinks about Epaphroditus, he can't help but think of all of the things that they've accomplished and experienced together as they serve God. And together they made a dent in the kingdom of darkness and were used by God to make a difference. There is a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction in their relationship. So Epaphroditus, you are my fellow worker, my partner, my teammate. The final words that Paul uses to describe Epaphroditus are kind of interesting because he calls him a fellow soldier. And Paul goes back to some war imagery, which he is familiar with using, And he takes the worker analogy, and now it goes even further. Because Paul thinks about how they went through the trenches together, how Epaphroditus was willing to sacrifice everything to make the ministry happen. And even coming to see Paul was a huge risk, and he almost lost his life in the process. As an aside, it seems that Paul has some fun with Epaphroditus' name at the end of this section. Epaphroditus' name is taken from the god Aphrodite, who is a favorite god of gamblers. Now in verse 30, Paul says that he almost died risking his life to make up for the help you couldn't give. Now the Greek word for risk means to gamble. So you can see Paul sort of smiling at his puns as he talks about Epaphroditus rolling the dice and taking a long shot to come help his friend who's in prison. But Epaphroditus was thinking, well, Paul needs help, I'm going to go help, because that's what friends do for each other. I'm going to go, and no matter what happens to me, if I don't make it, I don't make it. But if I do make it, Paul is blessed and the gospel is furthered. As a fellow soldier, he was ready to lay down his life for Paul. And it's an amazing illustration of true community. And the final description of Epaphroditus reminds us that the center of community is sacrifice. We're fellow soldiers fighting a battle, and if we're going to be effective for God, we need to be prepared to lay down our lives for each other. It's one thing to like each other as brothers and sisters and feel a heart connection. It's another thing to step out and serve, working for God. But when we see ourselves as fellow soldiers in the trenches together, our concept of community becomes a little deeper. And there are even times when we get to experience some of that here. The challenge for each of us is to walk the journey of Epaphroditus. For some of us, we need to move from being observers of a community to a place where we embrace the people of this community as brothers and sisters. It may be that we need to take a step toward membership. We need to begin speaking about our church as our church and not your church or the church or a church. It's a significant decision to embrace a community of believers as your own and see yourself as on the journey together. And if you haven't taken that step, I would encourage you to speak to an elder, to myself, or to somebody else that you trust about how you can join the family as a brother or a sister. And what we want to say to you is that Jesus welcomes you, and we will welcome you to experience life as brothers and sisters. Now, others of us have already done that and embraced this community as family, but there's room to grow. For us, the challenge may be to take our involvement to a next level where we see ourselves as fellow workers. One analogy is the dinner table. As someone said, both the dinner guests and the family members get to enjoy the same meal. The difference is that at the end of the meal, the family members are doing the dishes. And it's appropriate to be a dinner guest for a while. But then there comes a time when it's appropriate to get up and help with the dishes. And perhaps there are areas that God has laid on your heart where you would like to dive into the community and service, but you just haven't done it yet. Here at this church, you could help with one of our kids' programs, the Sunday school or the Kids Kingdom that meets during the sermon. We can always use help on Wednesday night teaching the children's class, joining the visitation teams, serving with our maintenance team, preparing communion. Maybe God is nudging you to just make yourself more available to the life and ministry of the church. So first we need to become brothers and sisters. Then we need to become fellow workers. And the final challenge is for those who may see themselves already as fellow workers, but need to press that one more step. Maybe God is inviting you to see yourself as a fellow soldier. And that raises some questions. What does it mean to live sacrificially for the Lord? Where is God calling me to surrender in my life? What does it mean for me to step out in faith and trust that God will work through me if I let Him? The community doesn't happen overnight. when each person in the family begins to wrestle with his or her own place in the church and takes a step toward deeper relationship, the community begins to grow. People who would normally never hang out together begin to love each other and lay down their lives for one simple reason: because Jesus laid down his life. It is my prayer that our community would become a place filled with people who know each other as brothers and sisters, fellow workers, and fellow soldiers. And to the world, we might look like a strange herd, but when the love of Jesus flows through us, the people in the world will want very much to join our amazing journey of faith together. This morning, if you've not joined the community here, or if you'd like to know how to get more involved, or if you have any needs with which we can help you, you can come forward and either I or Mr. Werner will chat with you as together we stand and as we sing.